And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Terms or restrictions apply.
Welcome to the Audible, presented by Trader Joe's. I'm Stuart Mandel, joined as always by Bruce Feldman. We haven't had a new episode in over a week, I believe, but it's that time of year before the playoff games where I just kind of lose track of what day of the week it even is, and we just kind of adjust our schedule around the postseason schedule. So we are recording this on Wednesday. Playoff games are on Friday. And a very unusual playoff for us, Bruce. This is, neither of us are going to a game. For me, it's the first time, well, certainly first time I've missed a playoff game. But it's even the first time, I believe, since my first year out of college in 1998, that I'm not traveling to anywhere in the postseason. What about you?
I think there was probably a year where I went and because there was overlap with the coaches' convention, I'm not sure. I might have missed one year. I want to say I watched the national title game. It was in Oklahoma. Was it Oklahoma LSU? Does that sound right? I'm trying to remember. It was definitely an LSU national title game, and I want to say it was about 12 or 13 years ago. I remember watching it from the coaches' convention.
Maybe LSU Ohio State.
I guess. It's been a while, but obviously, yeah. Crazy year. I was going to cover the Rose Bowl, but obviously the Rose Bowl ended up moving to Texas, and we already have people who are going to be on site with those covering it for The Athletic.
And to be clear, it's our choice not to go. Nobody told us we couldn't go to one of these playoff games. For me, it's obviously there's concern about traveling, but more so than that, the benefit of going to these playoff games has always been it's the best access you get all year. There's a media day beforehand where you can literally go up and talk to any coach or any player from the whole team. The locker room's open afterward. That never happens during the regular season. But to get on a plane from California to fly to New Orleans or Dallas to watch a game from the press box and then just get on a Zoom call after with nothing else was hard to justify.
Yeah, I'm with you. The best stuff I've always gotten from around the national title game is something that usually doesn't come directly from the formal media availability or anything like that. It's certainly stuff that, you know, look, when you see some things, even some of our colleagues have worked on stories, and then some of the, you see like a 400-word version of it that gets aggregated, maybe not even aggregated. I don't even know if it's fair to say that, just because somebody else was on the Zoom call and was like, hey, that's an interesting anecdote. I'm gonna grab that too. So I think it's just some unique challenges in here. And obviously I feel like you can still, as we've done this year, cover the sport as best we can from sometimes from the couch.
But The Athletic will be represented at both games quite well, with Andy Staples at the Sugar Bowl, Chris Vanini at the Rose Bowl in Arlington, and all of our team writers, Grace Rayner for Clemson, Bill Landis for Ohio State, Aaron Suttles for Alabama, and Pete Sampson for Notre Dame. They will all be on site. So we're not on the scene, but Ralph Russo, our friend from the AP, is, and we're going to have him on here in a minute. He just arrived in New Orleans, and we always have great conversations with Ralph. He's just a great conversationalist about college football. So we're going to get to him in a second. But anything stand out to you from the bowl game so far?
Well, we're in about a week in now, and there hasn't been the same kind of promotion that you usually get from ESPN with the most wonderful time of year stuff. And then the bowl games get to be, quite honestly, bigger brand schools. It didn't mean that the other games weren't entertaining, because the Liberty game the other night certainly was. But I felt like the doubleheader we had on Tuesday, the Miami-Oklahoma State game, which was a wild back-and-forth game, and then Texas was wild, even though it turned into a blowout where Bijan Robinson ran wild and had a huge game, and then Sam Ehlinger gets hurt at halftime and does not come back to play because of what was reported to be a shoulder injury. And then Casey Thompson comes in and looks and plays a phenomenal half of football. And I feel like going into, like, as we're taping this, we already have Wisconsin and Wake Forest playing, and there's a game tonight I'm very excited to watch, Oklahoma-Florida, which I think is a pretty compelling matchup, even though Florida is going to be shorthanded with some key guys. And I feel like now we're off and running, right? It's not just the playoff games. I feel like, honestly, I'm probably as intrigued by the Cincinnati-Georgia game as I am by any game that, you know, we may, that probably has bigger stakes in terms of what we're going to see related to the CFP. I mean, do you feel similar, and what do you kind of got your eye on?
Yeah, I mean, it suddenly just hit me. I did my bowl picks, and at the time it was 16 games in 5 days, but then another game got canceled, unfortunately, and it might not be the last. But yeah, just wow. By the time we get to, it was Tuesday, and by the time we get to Saturday, we will have seen everything from Texas-Colorado last night, Oklahoma-Florida, up through even the January 2nd has Northwestern-Auburn Citrus Bowl, Indiana-Ole Miss Outback Bowl, and that's the Oregon-Iowa State game that day. So it's fun. It's usually I'm watching these games from a hotel room somewhere or a hospitality room somewhere, but it's weird to be watching them from home. But to your point about the Texas game, this was, as I texted Max Olson during this, he's our resident Texas expert, former Austin resident. Wasn't this just the most Texas thing ever that could have happened? That we went from Tom Herman being on the hot seat and all that to, and then Sam Ehlinger gets hurt at halftime. It's just awful. Like, you don't want, if that's his last game, you don't want a guy's career to end like that. And then the backup comes off the bench and, I mean, looks incredible. And of course, Bijan Robinson, their freshman running back, was incredible all night too. And so now it's like in one half of this bowl game against a completely depleted Pac-12 team that I'm not sure how good they were in the first place. They won four of their first five games. Who knows what would have happened if Colorado played a full season. Now we get to spend 8 months being like, oh my gosh, they've got this young quarterback who looked great, and they've got the Bijan Robinson. Maybe next year will be Texas's year.
All right, Stu, you're already buying in. Is this the part? I know you get excited to do your early top 25. Tell me, can you give the listeners a little tip? Does this mean Texas will be preseason top five in your ranking?
So it's funny. I haven't really worked on it yet, but I've given it some thought. And I don't know if this was like maybe 2 days ago, 3 days ago. I was like, you know, with all the negativity around there with Herman, with Ehlinger moving on, I'm just not going to rank Texas this year. They're not going to be in my early top 25. And then people get sucked in by these bowl games. I bet you they will show up in people's early top 10. I don't know. They'll probably be in there. I don't know how high they'll be. I would just caution people. I always caution people, don't read too much into these non-playoff bowl games. But especially, I can't emphasize enough, the Colorado team that he was doing this to, or they were doing this to, Nate Landman, their heart and soul linebacker, wasn't playing. They were down to like 49 guys. I mean, they were basically playing somebody's JV team. So don't be, I know it's very tempting to be like, gosh, this guy's going to be the quarterback of the future. Try to pump the brakes. This wasn't Garrett Gilbert coming in against Alabama in the national championship game. This was the Alamo Bowl against Colorado.
Fair enough. All right, Stu, let's get to one of our favorite people in college football media, Ralph Russo.
Don't just ride the index, seek to outperform it with Fidelity Active ETFs. Learn more at fidelity.com/active ETFs. Before investing in any exchange-traded fund, you should consider its investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses. Contact Fidelity for a prospectus, an offering circular, or if available, a summary prospectus containing this information. Read it carefully. While active ETFs offer the potential to outperform an index, these products may more significantly trail an index as compared with passive ETFs. Fidelity Brokerage Services, LLC, member NYSE, SIPC.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/credit card.
He is the father of the AP top 25 poll. We won't hold that against him, but he always is very measured and very very thoughtful on all issues college football. We've had a lot of dialogue with Ralph over the course of this year, both on and offline. Ralph, thanks for joining us today on the Audible as you come to us from, where are you right now?
I am in New Orleans. There's a big football game to be played. And unfortunately, this has been a rare thing for all of us this year to actually go to the site of a big football game and cover it. I've only been to two games all year, but we did decide that the playoff games are important and we needed to have them covered in person.
Ralph, let me ask you, what is the biggest difference in terms of just from an operations standpoint? You've covered a lot of playoff games and you covered a lot of big games. So far, what have you seen and what do you anticipate being the biggest changes?
Oh, I mean, the simple fact that I'm here, I'm getting in 2 days before the game, right? I mean, usually we would be here with all my friends like Bruce and Stu, you know, 4 or 5, maybe even 6 days out. You'd have 3 days worth of media availabilities where you get to, you know, have some, you know, maybe not one-on-one time, but literal FaceTime with coaches, lots of press conferences, some breakout sessions. All that's gone. I mean, it's been done over Zoom the last couple of days. As much as, you know, the funny thing is, as much as we often complain about those breakout sessions and those one-on-one or like, you know, breakout sessions and news conferences and the availability structure when it's in person, you realize how much better it is than the Zoom sessions.
Oh yeah.
Which you just make do over the last couple of days on them. So that's the biggest difference. The lead up to the event is just gone. There's none. And plus also there's just not going to be a lot of people here too, but I literally just got to town. So I haven't really gained anything. I haven't really experienced that yet.
First of all, by this point in the week, normally if we were there, I would have already put on 5 pounds from all the places Andy Staples would have taken me to, you know, so that's gone, the like camaraderie and the meals. And, but yeah, the biggest reason for me was without that media day, which is, I mean, let's be honest, this is usually the best access we get anywhere all season. The whole team is available. The locker room's open after the game. That's never the case
right
during the regular season. And it's all reduced to a Zoom call.
I will say one thing. Andy will be here, your colleague. Mm-hmm. And we do have a dinner planned. Now,
okay.
We're eating outside. And honestly, like, you know, again, I'm trying not to be judgy because if, you know, listen, if you want to go inside, that's fine by me. He offered the reservation and it was already outside. I wouldn't have gone inside to a restaurant right now, but because it's outdoors. And so we're going to meet up tomorrow at a very fine eatery here in New Orleans. There are many very fine ones. But today, I might get a sandwich. I'm probably going to lay kind of low. I really like... The virus is freaking running wild right now, so I am going to be very, very cautious with my interactions.
Well, yeah, I mean, just this last night, like within an hour of each other, Kirk Herbstreit and Greg McElroy both tweeted that they have it and they can't go to their bowl sites. Tim Brando, our friend Tim Brando, has it. Speaking of our friend Tim Brando, this is what we really wanted to talk to you about. So I'm sure you've dealt with this too. We have, like, my inbox since Selection Sunday has just been full of angst. Everybody's we don't care about these semis. Who wants to watch Alabama blow out Notre Dame again? It's the same teams, blah, blah, blah. And I feel that, you know, I feel that, I mean, I think it's kind of a perfect storm of this was such a hard season to fully get into in the first place with the cancellations and the first, the Big Ten was out and then they were in. And then on top of that, this was about as non-suspenseful a playoff race as you could get. But so you are, it seems you were on Paul Feinbaum's show. It sounds like he asked you about this, about fatigue, Bama Clemson fatigue. And you said, well, I'll let you say what you said and we can discuss it from there.
Yeah, the funny thing is, you know, as always, so, you know, Paul tweets, they'll tweet out a quote or two, and they tend to do the stuff that makes Alabama fans happy. They play to their brand, right? they tend to tweet
or out. Or what ticks them off, right? Or what'll get them
happy. Or what ticks them off, right? They tend to try to pull a quote from you that will give a rise one way or another to, I shouldn't say Alabama fans, but tends to be SEC fans and often Alabama fans. So a lot of that interview was spent talking about how hard this season was, talking about playoff expansion and the fact that, like, you know, we probably need to figure out a way to get a few more teams involved because this is getting a bit monotonous. But toward the end, he talked about the Bama fatigue. And, you know, the way I ended it was like, listen, I get it, but there's nothing we can do to the playoff that stops Alabama from signing, you know, 5 5-stars and 24 stars every single year, and Clemson doing something similar and Ohio State doing something similar. So that doesn't necessarily make the playoff, you know, that doesn't do anything to prevent us from getting to Alabama Clemson yet again. But the other thing I said, I think that that tweaked people a little bit, I think that set off Tim Brando, was I also said, listen, I understand it's going to be this way for a while. So maybe watch Trevor Lawrence, appreciate the greatness of Devontae Smith and Mac Jones, the greatness of Alabama. We are witnessing a historically great run like that has never been done before in Alabama, in college football history in Alabama. So maybe I understand there's a little bit of fatigue to it, but there's also maybe appreciate the greatness and enjoy some of that too. And if you can't really enjoy watching Trevor Lawrence play, are you really a college football fan? And I think that was the thing that set people off. And it got Brando and some other folks coming at me that I was guarding the establishment or something, that I was like, you know.
That you were Bill Hancock's, you're doing Bill Hancock's PR.
Right. And maybe to a certain degree I am, but I mean, this is the system we have now. And again, Alabama Clemson or Alabama Ohio State. Sorry, Notre Dame, I'm just not going to, you know, I'm not going to buy into that, but maybe you never know. Maybe Notre Dame does something there. And that would be really cool too, to have a huge upset, because we haven't had that in the playoff era. But Alabama Clemson will be an awesome game. Or Alabama Ohio State would be an awesome game. We don't root against awesomeness in other sports. If I'm watching the NBA, I kind of want the best of the two teams coming out from each, you know, conference to play in the final. And we kind of want Rodgers Mahomes in the Super Bowl this year, right? Those are the best two teams. And I can understand like why you would want that. So I totally understand the limitations, but I also think that to sort of dismiss it and not appreciate watching the Bama dynasty and Clemson or the Bama dynasty and Ohio State is a little bit of cutting off your nose to spite your face.
Ralph, let me ask you this, because I know you're probably more of a sports fan beyond college football than Stu is necessarily, but, and we're about the same age. And so we both grew up as sports fans in the 80s. So as you're talking about this, I'm thinking about Lakers Celtics and some of these things that went beyond 1 or 2 years, right? I'm sure, you know, you remember growing up in New York, some of the Yankee Red Sox back and forth and the Yankees Royals. And just obviously we've seen this from other sports. Why do you think
And granted, maybe some of this is a function of us living in a Twitter social media age where we're like kind of pelted by everyone's, you know, pebble in their shoe mentality or whatever. But why do you think people in college football circles seem to be so irritated? You never heard, maybe it existed and I didn't pay attention to it, but you never heard of like those other fatigues, whether it involved the Patriots or the Steelers or the Cowboys.
The Warriors.
It just didn't.
Jordan and the Bulls.
Yeah.
Or let's say Michael Jordan's Bulls. It didn't seem like anybody ever got tired of that, though I'm sure Knicks, and I lived in New York, so I'm sure Knicks fans got a little tired of it. I wasn't a Knicks fan. Yeah, it's a good question, and it's something I have been thinking about, like why in college football do we seem to be pushing against the dynasty so much when there is a lot of information and data that has been gathered over the years that say dynasties are actually pretty good for sports? Then why are we pushing against the dynasty here in college football? I think part of it is dynasties in professional sports are built around players and great players that we become accustomed to seeing all the time. And in college football, the players come and go. So it's Nick Saban's Alabama dynasty. Derrick Henry was there for a year and then he was gone. And then Tua was there for a couple of years and he's gone. So as much as it was great watching Deshaun Watson and Trevor, they pass through very quickly. So I think there's a little something to be said for that element of it. I think there is more inevitability here too. I think with long professional seasons and many layers of playoffs, you saw the Bulls get challenged. You would see could the Lakers get past, I'm trying to think back in the day, the Rockets to get to the Celtics? Could the Celtics get past the Sixers to get to the Lakers? Even the Bulls, listen, I don't think they ever got pushed to 7 in any of their finals, their 6 finals with Jordan, but they had rivals and there was this sort of like, you could feel like they could lose, even though they probably won't, they could lose. And I think the inevitability of the college football dynasties where it doesn't feel like Alabama can lose, except maybe to Clemson. And that's the thing that I think is hurting the sport. There seems to be an inevitability to these dynasties that I'm like we're not even seeing a chance of these teams losing. So I'm investing a lot of energy into a foregone conclusion.
So my theory, I agree with everything you just said. I will add it to it. My theory, which is that I think people feel like, the Patriots win 2 or 3 playoff games to get there. The Warriors have to win all these best-of-7 series, they earned their way in, whereas college football's playoff field is selected, right? Mm-hmm. And Alabama's always going to get the – I mean, there's no controversy over those teams getting in this year, but that Alabama's always going to get the benefit of the doubt, or that maybe if we'd put Cincinnati in instead that they would have given Alabama – right? So there's always that controversy to it in terms of these teams are given like an advantage – right, from this subjective committee that's like in the bag for the SEC, that part of it.
I'll add one more thing there. And I think you've heard, I've probably even done it on this show because I use this line a lot. We are geared as sports fans. We have been learned. We have been taught we that the way sports work is you win something and you get something, right? You win a division and that makes you go to a playoff game, playoff series or a playoff game. And then you win that game and you advance on. And that's the thing that I think super frustrates. It plays into what you're saying, but it's probably just a different way of saying it, right? College football has never had a structure where you clearly win this thing. Now we do a little bit with the divisions and then you win a championship game. So within the conference structure, you have that. And I think it just short circuits sports fans of like, wait a second, like you win a thing and then you get a thing. That's right. The way sports works. And we don't And there's a big hole missing in college football structure where you get, again, like, you're supposed to win your conference and then move on. And we see times when that doesn't happen. So that, I think, really short circuits college football fans and college football as far as people just sort of embracing the postseason.
And that's why this thing's going to expand, because it's not about, and you say, I saw you say it on Twitter, expanding the playoff would do nothing to change who wins it. And there's a mailbag reader today pointed out that,
read that.
Yeah. 24 team, the FCS has a 24 team playoff, and North Dakota State has won 8 of the last 9. And Division III, believe it or not, has a 32 team playoff. And from 2005 to 18, only 3 different schools won it. So you're not changing who, it's not impacting who wins it. But to your point, you know, in professional sports where, you know, you don't feel like, oh, I'm in the NFC West and I have no stake in the game, right? But in college, Pac-12 fans generally feel like, because our conference is disrespected or is not as good, why should I be invested in this product, this postseason? We can win our conference and still not be part of it.
Right. And the whole goal of everything since Roy Kramer sketched out the bowl champion with the bowl alliance, I guess it was on the back of a napkin. I don't know if that's a true story, but that's the legend, as legend has it. Old SEC commissioner sketched out what became the BCS on the back of a napkin. The goal was always to create a national sport of college football. That has always been the goal, to create a more of a national sport. SEC fans care about what happens in the Pac-12. There was a point in with the BCS where SEC fans really cared about Boise State football. Like,
it's true.
So it accomplished that. And I think now we're in this sort of in-between stage where we thought the playoff was going to advance that, and it's not. Yeah.
One thing on that. So you said when SEC fans cared about the Pac-12 or cared about Boise State, here's one of the things that I think has kind of happened. And granted, the pandemic is probably the worst time to kind of focus on this part. But I think one of the issues is when the Pac-12 fans, and even when the Big Ten fans, and maybe the Big 12 fans, stop caring as much, because they feel like, okay, our team lost, you know, our best team lost 2 games. We're out of the playoff, right? So then our conference championship doesn't really matter. I mean, it does, but it really doesn't. And I think more than getting the SEC fans to care about the Big 12 or the Pac-12, I think it's keeping the fans of those leagues engaged. I'm not saying so they'll give a crap about the Tuesday night ESPN show, but I think at least at this point, it would keep them more invested in the whole season, and it's not who's in or who's out. I think it just makes it more of an engagement, which I do think would be really good for the sport.
You don't want to create, listen, I don't think you're going to go to a 60-14 tournament like basketball at some point. Maybe by the time we're all long gone from covering the sport. But you do want to get to a place where making the playoff becomes the goal of the season. And I guess you can say, well, that is the case now, but very few people feel like they can.
Right.
And I think if you have a few more spots, you engage more people more fans into the idea that, like, we made the playoff, this is a good season. Right. Cause that's basically the way it is with the basketball tournament. If you make the basketball tournament, it's a good season for most of college basketball. Making the tournament is a good season, depending on what level you are. If you're a more of a blue blood program, maybe you got to get to the Final Four and things along those lines. You need to have a little bit more of that going on, where there are teams that feel like they can make the playoff, have a clear path to making the playoff. And when they get there, even if they get their asses handed to them, they have had a successful season simply by getting there. And just, you're right. Like, I mean, if your conference championship doesn't feel meaningful, then we've actually taken away a little bit from the sport.
Yeah. As I said in the mailbag today, we've spent the entire history of the sport trying to fix it. Everybody's always looking to fix the sport that is actually extremely popular. And the thing is, as much as people loathed the BCS, and they really did, like, people hated the BCS, but it actually made the season more suspenseful, because if you had a 4-team playoff last decade, USC would have been in it every year. It would have been just like people complain about Alabama, Clemson. They would have been complaining about how, oh, it's always USC, Oklahoma, or USC, Ohio State. And heck, USC might have won it more pretty frequently. But in that system where there were only two spots, I mean, USC lost to Oregon State on a Thursday night one year, and they were done. I mean, they may well have had the best team by the end of the year, but they were done. And so it created higher stakes. Now there's that margin for error. And so even the Alabamas, the Clemson can lose to Notre Dame this year and still make the playoff. At the end of the day, for all this complaining, I guarantee – so this is a year when the semis are on January 1. I guarantee you the next morning we're going to get that email from ESPN that says, 22 million people watched the Sugar Bowl, set your highest rated sports event on cable this year. You know, like, they're still extremely popular events, but I think that the people who are the most invested in it, which are the people that read my column and listen to your podcast and whatnot, are the ones who are, you know, probably have the most, are the most passionate about the fact that it needs to change.
Right. Because the playoff, the other thing people don't understand, because you also get some of the, well, as you said, you know, the pushback of we don't even need four. We should just go back to two. Like, four has been too many. You can easily decide the championship with two. But, you know, that sort of doesn't do justice to the idea that this is a business. We are trying to entertain people. We are trying to grab more eyeballs. And, you know, I heard one of the ESPN hosts, I can't remember. Oh, no, it was Zubin Mehente, was talking about it on the morning show, the new morning show. And he made a great point. It's something we've thought of, but he verbalized it very well. He's like, what we are trying to do in sports in general, because he was talking about how TV ratings are down. We're not trying to get the passionate fan. We know you're showing up. We're trying to get the people on the fringes who are fans, but maybe, you know, aren't showing up every game or for every weekend, or may find something else interesting to do. And I think we're just trying to create a bigger tent here with college football. And right now we're sort of caught in between the BCS left too many teams out who could have won a championship. And now we've expanded to the point where we have all the teams that probably can win it.
Yeah.
But there's also a bunch of other teams that probably could be worthy of being in it. So four ended up being a little bit caught in between.
Yeah, Oklahoma, like, the Magic sweet spot so far has been three for the most part. I mean, you weren't going to leave out – imagine if it had been the BCS last year and you were going to leave out one of LSU, Ohio State, and Clemson. Like, those were dominant teams all season. And you can – some people think you shouldn't have Ohio State in this year because they didn't play enough games. But if you're talking three best teams, they should be in it. It's just that some years the fourth team is a throw-in. And but that's life, right? That's how, I mean, there's going to be an NFL playoff team this year that's below 500. That's what you get, you know, when you expand your system.
So on the plane, I was sketching out different, we're not going to get too deep into this. I was trying to sketch out, like, well, eight seems the right one, but I really want to create a playoff where the first two teams get byes, like one and two, because I think that's where the blowouts are. So if you can create a structure where the top two get a pass, you could get a first round with a lot more competitive games. So, you know, is it six? Is it 12? You know, I'm not good with numbers. So I'm like cramped trying to figure out a way 10 will work. And I'm like, no, there's no way I can get 10 to work. The bracket just doesn't work. So anyway, that's what I was doing for about half an hour on my plane trip.
Ralph, I'll ask you this. So we've obviously had a bunch of conversations offline. This has been a long year. We're coming up to the end of it, thankfully. What is something that, in the face of all this, you have become and learned to be much more appreciative now that maybe you had taken for granted of, and now all of a sudden you kind of see it differently?
Oh, wow. I mean, within our sport or within life in general?
Well, I don't want you to say something, you know, necessarily something entirely personal that goes on in your household,
sure,
but just something that about your job, about the sport you cover.
Gosh, I don't know if there's, I mean, this season has been such a grind, such an unbelievable grind. Like, I am not necessarily looking forward to carrying any of this over. You know, to a certain degree, maybe I have, I'll give you more of a lessons learned. I've learned to appreciate, but I've learned to appreciate because I don't think I did a good job. I got very focused on covering, like, will they play, how they'll play, will they play, how they'll play, to the extent where, like, I went weeks without calling a coach, without writing about a player or two. Like, I was felt very detached from the playing of the games, and I'm really looking and the teams and the people who again coach and play, because I was so in tune with, like, gotta call a commissioner, gotta call an AD, gotta call a doctor, gotta call an epidemiologist. So I think what I've sort of, like, what I'm hoping to do when things get back to normal is, like, even without going on the road, is to just, like, reconnect with a lot of people who I've, like, not done a good job of staying connected with as far as sources. So I guess the appreciation, it would be like, hey man, like, you know, just again, to understand that you got to stay connected to the sport at large. I cover everything, and you want to sort of have those connections to that part of the sport. So what I miss most, and what I end up appreciating, is sort of covering the X's and O's a little bit. Like, I love football, and I love the personalities. I haven't written a story about like a profile. I think I wrote one this year. I kind of miss getting to know some people, you know, like, that's like one of the, and telling their stories. Like, I haven't written a lot of that throughout this year. And that's, I appreciate it more because I miss it.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
Which little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Terms or restrictions apply.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10. Place your first bet on any game and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
I feel like some of this, and I noticed this certainly with my TV job, where you know, I was mindful. I was like, you know, and I get what I was the news guy on the Big Noon kickoff show, but also, you know, there's so much you could get mired in, quote, the bad news. This game is getting canceled. This is contact tracing. And it's like, and that is news and that was real. But at the same point, I totally get it, because a lot of times I think that it just became, once we got past the reality of, okay, I think they're going to try and play. And like you said, how are they going to play? And how is this thing going to go? And again, I know you follow baseball probably closer than me, and definitely closer than Stu, but it's like, once you see that baseball is kind of teetering but it's going forward, I think it puts you in maybe a different framework. Now obviously it's a different sport and how it's run than college football, but there's no bubble. And I think so, that kind of one thing that I kind of was mindful of maybe early on is, a lot of times I feel like we all follow each other on Twitter. I think sometimes some of us write for other writers as much as some of the work we do. And you kind of, it becomes a little bit of an echo chamber. And I think that is a challenge that you know, I kind of reminded myself of at times. And it's really interesting because I'm with you. There's so much of 2020 when people go, yeah, when the book is written, I'm like, I don't want to read that book. Like, this is a miserable book. Why would I, you know, want any part of that? But then there is some other things where you said, like, some lessons learned and some things, like, personally, there's things that I'm definitely grateful about 2020 that I appreciate inside, you know, that have nothing to do with college football necessarily. But in terms of how we covered the sport, I definitely think there's some takeaways that have kind of materialized over the course of the year. And I think, you know, it sounds like we're on the same page a little bit on that.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, something you said, Ralph, somebody asked in the mailbag, and I end up not including the question, but somebody asked, you know, amidst all the doom and gloom this year and all the, you know, the things that you didn't get to do, is there anything from covering the season that you will take forward? And kind of what you just said, I was going to answer it, and I was like, nothing. There was nothing that came about from this. Like, he suggested, like, maybe you'll like doing the Zoom calls, you know, not having to go on the road. I'm like, no, I as soon as we can be done with the Zoom calls and we can actually go, I can go back to somebody's office and sit in their office for a half hour. Like, I want to do that. And I want to go back to stadiums with, you know, where the stands are full and you don't have to worry that you're going to get it. Like, nothing. I don't take nothing from the season, but what you said, right? Like, I will take lessons and takeaways about kind of the content that people enjoy or don't enjoy and do more of this and less of that.
I think the other part of it that made this season so much less enjoyable was, and we knew this was coming, the pandemic seeped into the season, not just in the obvious ways, right? Canceling games, Trevor Lawrence is not playing because he gets COVID. There was this just constant stream of news. But when I say it seeped into the season, it seeped in, well, since we always do the backdrop of the playoff, like, it seeped into, we're going to argue about Ohio State because they didn't play enough games in a pandemic. We're going to argue about Notre Dame because Trevor Lawrence got COVID and didn't play in the first game, in the first series. So the pandemic and COVID seeped into the walls of the sport. It affected the integrity of, like, the games were supposed to be an escape. The games and the way the playoff race comes out and the Heisman and the players themselves, like, seeing the games on Saturday, it kind of felt normal, but it's like, I don't want to have a playoff discussion about COVID, right? Like I'm not here for that. I don't like that. And that took away a lot of the enjoyment of the season, because you say, oh, it's an escape. It's an escape. But everything COVID, I mean, again, COVID was just slathered in everything about this season. It was hard to remove it and just sort of enjoy the season.
Well put. Yeah, I think that's why we're all feeling a lot drained and burnt out as we get. I don't feel that, you know, I will look forward to watching the games on Friday. I enjoyed watching the Cheez-It Bowl and the Alamo Bowl yesterday. Those were, even though the Alamo Bowl was a blowout, it was quite eventful in terms of what happened first with Sam Ellinger, unfortunately, and then with the backups that came in. But so it's fun to watch the games, but it has not been fun to cover Dabo Swinney, you know, getting into a fight with Florida State over whether one positive COVID test was enough to merit canceling the game or not, or Dabo again, right? Like, he's got this axe to grind about Ohio State, and they got to play fewer games, and it's like, they didn't choose to play fewer games. They couldn't manage their conference and their school couldn't manage to get in more games amidst a deadly virus that was circulating in the country. Like,
that's kind of it. Yeah. I felt like everybody just needed to, very early on in the pandemic, at a certain point, my wife was dealing with, I don't know if it was an employee of hers or someone she was dealing with she works at the health department in New York, and she was relaying a story of, like, this person is complaining about this. And I could see, like, you know, again, this was relatively early on. She just, like, my wife doesn't get angry. And she was like, she dropped an F-bomb and was like, you know what? Everybody's sacrificing. We just got to deal with it. Like, you know, stop complaining. And that's what I felt like a lot of this season. It was like, guys, we're just doing the best we can here. This is all just trying to, like, we're just piecing everything together in this season. Please stop fighting about it and let's just get through it and appreciate what we can do with it.
Sadly, I think, you know, for a lot of people, and I don't necessarily mean this related to like Dabo per se, but I think the pandemic, because it brought out some of the worst instincts in a lot of people. And so you saw that, and you saw it on social media, and you saw it in a lot of different ways. And, you know, I know from talking to certain coaches, their skepticism about who actually had, you know, outbreaks and who was trying to back out of games. And it's just like, it was kind of probably exhausting for them. And it's certainly exhausting for their players and certainly for their families. And I think it, quite honestly, it brought out the worst in a lot of people, not in everybody, but I think it brought out some of those things. And, you know, look, hopefully 2021, and when by the time we get to the fall in college football season, hopefully we'll be back to some more version of normal.
And speaking of Clemson and COVID seeping into the college football world, as we're recording this, Clemson announces offensive coordinator Tony Elliott is unavailable for the Sugar Bowl because of COVID-19 protocols. He will not travel with the team to New Orleans. So hopefully he's okay, and hopefully that's not indicative of some more widespread problem that Clemson might be having. But I mean, wow. I've been sitting here crossing my fingers this whole time that we'll actually make it to Friday without disruption.
Yeah, again, and literally the news never stops. And that's another part of it too. I think as someone, listen, Stu and Bruce work super duper hard. So I'm not trying to say like, I work really hard and I work harder than, but the nature of my job is a little more like, I got to kind of react to everything. So that's another thing that has made this year such a grind. It's just this constant, like, just there's never a day when there is not another thing in the news that sort of has to be dealt with. Right. I think the day that Trevor tested positive was almost a day that broke me. Like, I don't remember exactly what it was, like late October, obviously. But I remember that happened and turning to my wife and just like, I can't wait until this is over. Like, I've never felt like this about a college football season where like, I cannot wait until this is over, because it never stops. It never, ever stops. So of course, very appropriate that today it wouldn't stop.
And it's been that way since March. That's the thing. Like, people say it's been a long season. Yes, because it didn't start September 12th or whatever date that was. It started back in the summer when every day there was a new development about whether the Big Ten was going to play or not. Or
basically, well, March 12th, right? The day the NCAA tournament was canceled. Though I must admit, at that point, and you know, we all talk to people in college football, most people in college football thought, well,
it'll be fine by fall. Yeah.
Yeah. We should be okay by fall. Not until about June or July. Well, really actually in July, right after the 4th of July spike, did people go, oh boy, we're not fine.
Yeah.
Hey Ralph, what really is okay? I mean, like, that's the issue. Like, what is okay at this point?
Yeah.
So that's rhetorical. Exactly, yeah. I'm not asking you to go down.
I went back and I was reading some articles I wrote around that period, like March, early April, where we talked to commissioners, and like at that point they were still talking about, we're going to have to come up with some protocols for what happens if a player tests positive. Like, they were thinking like kind of Rudy Gobert-ish, like, oh no, what will we do if one player tests positive?
Right.
You know, who would have guessed then that, I mean, there's teams that we know of that have had like 75 positive tests.
Well, I mentioned this on Feinbaum yesterday when he was like, you know, how did we do this? How did we get through this? And, you know, listen, the reason why the world shut down is because we didn't know what we were doing, right? We had no idea what this virus was. And this is where I'll sort of speak what my wife's language, because she's an epidemiologist. Like, at first, you have to react in grand ways because you have no idea what you're dealing with. I think at a certain point where we ended up being able to have a season is two things. A, it became pretty apparent that the worst case scenarios were not going to play out in the population of players. That getting the virus was not going to be like, and this is not to say that we should be flipping about it, though it feels like some cases, maybe there are some schools that maybe were not as careful as others, but it became apparent that the players were not going to have the worst case scenario outcomes, and that the disease wasn't, or the virus wasn't spreading on the field. I think once those two things were pretty well established with science, I think it became like, okay, we can do this. We can just push through and get this thing in.
On that note, Ralph, we appreciate seeing you on this Zoom podcast. We hope you have a good stay. Wow, what is all that white on the underneath your hat?
When my hair grows long, the grays become, I'm, you know, salt and pepper, but definitely more salt than pepper these days. But when it grows out, it becomes, the grays become far more prominent.
You should blame that on 2020.
Didn't know we were doing a podcast with Steve Martin today. Holy cow. Did not see that coming. Not that I can, I mean, I've seen pictures of myself recently. My hair definitely grayed way more than 9 months worth this year. Ralph, we always appreciate talking to you. In fact, When I first suggested bringing you on, Bruce was like, didn't we just have him on? And we were shocked to find out you actually have not come on this calendar year. So I'm glad we got it in before this 2020 mercifully ended.
Yeah, you know, I think there was a point when you guys had asked me to come on, but it was one of those like, hey, I just like, it's not working out.
Yeah.
One thing led to another. And all of a sudden, like, I texted you guys like 3 hours later. I'm like, do you still need me? Like, and Stu was like, no, we got it done.
Yeah. That's right. I do remember that now.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I'm glad it worked out. Have a good meal with Andy tonight. I hope you're going to Toops Meadery. And
yes.
Nice. All right. And we'll talk to you again soon.
Always good talking with and seeing you guys.
All right, Bruce. Well, I think we're going to come back, guys. We're going to come back as we often do, always do, I think, Friday night after this semifinal games end. Bruce and I will hop on Zoom and give our reactions, and we'll be able to do it even earlier than usual because we won't miss me going down and doing interviews and all that. And by the way, it's going to be nice to be on Pacific time for once when these games wrap up. And then we'll come back next week with one leading.
Wait a minute. It's always nice to be on Pacific time. What are you talking about?
Well, it's great to be on Pacific. I always tell people this is the best time zone for sports viewing, without a doubt. But yeah, I'm so used to, I mean, you and I have at the national championship game recorded podcasts at like 3 a.m. in somebody's hotel room because we were in Tampa or Miami or somewhere. So if knock on wood, the game should end at 8:30 Friday night. And then we'll come back next week. We'll do one leading into the national championship game. I'd like to hit emails on that one because we haven't done that in a while. So as always, send your emails to theaudiblepod@gmail.com. We'll see you next time.
Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets, and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.